You are listening to 600 Second Saga. Today's feature is Toymaker by Olga Werby.
Close the door,
Toymaker shouted from his table at the back of the workshop. He was carving a small homunculus from a black stone, the heart of an elder for a new species of toy dwarfs he was designing. He imagined them small, but powerful and super maneuverable. Smart, too. At some point in the making process, the toys took over, and few ended up like the early visions in his mind's eye. Each individual creation directed what it ultimately wanted to be. The maker was just there for the ride, after the heart was carved. But the heart was everything. It set the capacity for goodness and degree of nobility, as well as bigness of soul. The maker admired the heart he'd just made. It came out more exuberant than he expected. After he finished the original model, it would become the archetype for the whole tribe. A young boy walked in quietly and shut the door on a world of ice outside. The snow that sneaked in with him twirled at his feet before melting on the stone floor. The toy workshop was large, but dark, lit only by the maker's power table. A disc at its center glowed red-orange, giving the whole space a look of warmth. Just not the feel of it. Ian shivered. Beyond the glowing table, there was a wall full of Toymaker's newest creations. They were arranged on shelves, organized by species. Ian admired a row of newly made warriors. They were lithe, tall, with elongated, almost wasp-like waists. Some had wings sprouting from their necks, not large enough to fly, but surely useful in broad jumps and leaps. The leader was at least a head taller than any of the others of her tribe. She wore furs around her shoulders, just below her slim wings, and tights with leather boots wrapped firmly with cords up to her knees. Her hair was long and wild, sticking out above her head like a halo. Several times the maker tried to carve her breasts, and each time it felt wrong. Until he finally figured her kind just didn't grow feminine curves. The toys always informed him what was right for them. As Ian watched, the warrior queen flexed her shoulders, releasing tension from her wings. She tapped her long spear into the ground, a stone shelf, for Ian, and looked around at her tribe. The maker outdid himself in their design. They looked fierce, but they were not dressed for this incessant cold. Ian spotted a few of the queen's comrades shivering discreetly, trying to hide their weakness. Toymaker was startled when he heard Ian speak to his toys. He had forgotten about the boy. He strained to listen. Usually, Ian spoke for both sides, his own and the toys. Toys didn't have a life outside the one their owners gave them. People used toys to tell stories, or to diffuse arguments, or to entertain each other during the long, dark winters. The form of each toy helped individuals express their feelings. The play was the truest form of therapy. A movement caught the maker's eye. The breastless winged warrior moved.
Moved?
He rubbed his eyes and leaned in closer for a look, trying not to spook the boy. Or the toy. Sure enough, the queen, as the boy called her, shook her hair and stretched her wings out, her whole demeanor signaling displeasure. But toys didn't move on their own. They didn't speak in voices other than that of their owners. This was wrong.
Ian?
Ian and the queen turned in unison. Even colorless, the queen clearly looked directly into the toymaker's eyes. He gasped and held onto the table for support. His legs felt soft like the maker's clay, The queen yelled. Toymaker heard her clearly this time. And like a swarm of beetles, she and her tribe of toys leapt off the shelf, spears twirling in the air, hair streaming and whipping behind them, exaggerating their every movement. It was a spine-chilling sight. The boy jumped away. Toymaker tried to step back, but found himself unable to move. His legs and arms stopped listening to his brain, frozen in terror and surprise. Toys didn't move on their own. The queen led her small force toward the power source. Using their spears like vaulting poles, the little warriors somersaulted onto the glowing surface. The queen was first, and stood defiantly, watching Toymaker cower above her. When the whole tribe was on the table, she walked them over to the center of the power disk and settled, her hair like a crown, asserting her superiority over space and time. The rest of the toy warriors followed and nestled into a circle around their queen.
"What was that?"
the maker managed. "They were cold," Ian said.
"Cold?"
"You didn't give them enough protection from the elements. They're from a hot world, unlike ours," the boy explained.
"But they're toys, toys,"
the maker repeated for emphasis. "They're cold," the boy said, as if it explained everything. On the energy table, the tribe of toys stilled, looking comfortably warm.
"Toys don't move on their own,"
Toymaker said. "Of course they do." Ian didn't seem a bit surprised or perturbed by the toys' maneuvers.
"They don't move,"
the maker repeated stubbornly. "Their time isn't like our time," the boy explained. "So we don't see them move. If we lived in their time frame, we'd catch them moving and talking all the time. But we live much faster than they do. When we die, they'll still be around. I have toys that my great-grandfather used to play with as a child. They still live while he is dead."
"It's not the same,"
insisted the toymaker.
"Do you often see my creations move?"
He decided to change his tactics. "No, this was the first time," Ian said. "But the queen explained why they had to do it. Next time, make them extra clothing." This was Toymaker by Olga Werby. Olga has a doctorate from UC Berkeley with a focus on designing online learning experiences. She has a master's degree from UC Berkeley in education of math, science, and technology. She has been creating computer-based projects since 1981 with organizations such as NASA, where she worked on the Pioneer Venus Project, Addison Wesley, and Princeton Review. Olga has a BA in mathematics and astrophysics from Columbia University. She became an accidental science fiction indie writer about a decade ago with her first book, Suddenly Paris, which was based on the then fairly novel idea of virtual universes. Check our show notes for links. She writes about characters that rarely get represented in science fiction stories. Homeless kids, refugees, handicapped, autistic individuals, the social underdogs of our world. Her stories are based in real science, which is admittedly stretched to the very limit of possible. Check our show notes for links to her blog and her book. Music is provided by Mads. Learn more about 600 Second Saga, our authors, how to submit your flash fiction, and how to support the podcast in the show notes. This has been Mariah Evicks and 600 Second Saga.